This is Scott Richmond
and Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie, good morning. Today we have some special programming.
As many of our listeners know, John Engen, long-term mayor of Missoula, died on August 15th. And we were lucky enough over the past 6 years or so to have him on our show many times as a guest. And we're going to use the next couple of weeks to share with our listeners again the comments, thoughts, and life of John Engen.
Scott, good morning to you. We're a little bit over 2 weeks after Democrats got shellacked in Montana. We have a president-elect from a different party, although it's being challenged. And today's show, we have Mayor John Engen to give us a little bit of his take, post-mortem on the election. What's the current status of COVID in our community and you know, what we have to look forward to or have to avoid over the next few months. And, you know, what are some of the bright spots and his priorities for 2021, which is fast approaching.
Fast approaching. Mayor Engen's always a great guest, Arnie. I'm looking forward to it. Back after this. All right, Arnie, we are back with our guest, Mayor John Engen.
Mayor, how are you feeling?
I am up and at 'em on a lovely Wednesday afternoon in Missoula, Montana.
Well, good. It's good to see you. We're 2 weeks past our election at this recording. And, you know, it's probably premature, but I'm going to ask you anyway, sort of as a postmortem. You know, what the hell happened to the Democrats in Montana? What's your take on it 2 weeks out?
So the beauty is I never pretended to be a pundit before the election. and I don't know that I am now. And I don't know that I have any particular insight as a function of being an elected person. So short version is that more Republicans voted for Republicans than Democrats voted for Democrats. So ultimately, it's a math problem, right? And so I think that the conversations we've been having internally, and, you know, Missoula tends to be a little blue island for all sorts of reasons. I think one of the questions that comes to mind for me is, are Montanans skeptical of progressive notions that are relentless? I mean, there seems to be a lack of moderation in the country in general. And I have general life as a moderate Democrat. I'm not a police defunder. I believe that we need, that we have an obligation to our fellow human beings with regard to social safety net, but fundamentally have supported, our system of capitalism. And I think some of the noise and the anger just left people afraid and thinking that Democrats are going to run, roughshod over liberty. And I think if you hear that enough, and if you don't have a lot of experience with reasonable Democrats, that might be the place you go. I was shocked by the margins statewide. I thought a number of the elections would be squeakers. I thought that we would pick up the House seat. Clearly wrong about that. I thought that the Senate race was going to be a quicker. I thought that the margin would be tighter with governor's race. And at the end of the day, the margins were wide. My hope is that we can figure out some ways to work together. One of the things that I have, I've tried to do over the years is not automatically dismiss someone who had a different initial behind their last name than the one I have. My hope is that folks on the team can think about that as well. This country, in my opinion, was at its best when moderate people figured out ways to work together, and that's just gone missing.
Well, the country in general is more in the middle. Yeah. We like to hear about the extremes because they're more newsworthy and they're more, you know, emotionally rendering kind of banter or headlines or, you know, whatever, with the thousands of news outlets that are out there. But now we have a circumstance in Montana that hasn't existed in our lifetime, I don't think, having all three branches of government controlled, you know, the House, the Senate, and the completely dominated by one party, in this case, the Republican Party. And that's unprecedented. I mean, I think the last time that happened in Montana was in 1930s. And I've seen, there are a couple of things that have initially percolated out that I thought you might want to comment on. One is some of the early release of their agenda, to me, looks a little bit like the experiment, as it's referred to, which was, to most observers, not a very good experience. On cutting taxes, giving businesses huge tax cuts, and somehow that's going to benefit the rank and file average person, never materialized in Kansas. They didn't take welfare expansion as part of their agenda. That didn't go very well. It led to a change in leadership in the state, you know, by and large. And I'm wondering, after looking at some of the, what's your thought about how Montana is going to drift over the next at least 2 years for sure?
Well, so a couple of things that I believe to be true. One is governing is different from campaigning. Governing is different from promising. And pure agendas under any construct don't tend to survive. The agenda that I had seen the speaker or the presumed speaker elect to have delivered to the Republican caucus, I don't think there's much unexpected there. Whether you're a Montana Democrat or a Montana Republican or a Montana Independent, we're not very good at lockstep, and we're not very good at one size fits all solutions, particularly when we're not sure that there's a problem to begin with. So while I think that is likely an ambitious agenda, My sense of things is that it will likely get tempered by the process itself. Mm-hmm. And whether you're Republican or Democrat, it's hard to keep everybody in the caucus where you need them, because they report to different constituencies and have perspective and have obligations.
Although in the past, as you know, Mayor, there has been a, sort of a override ability, or a, you know, there wasn't a super majority in both houses of the legislature, and there is now, which appears to mean to me that if there's something egregious happening, the only, you know, by a Democratic perspective or even an independent perspective, let's say Medicare rollback or a much more strident anti-abortion, rulings, then the only recourse you have is a legal recourse, because you can't do anything to block it in the legislature. They have an unfettered ability, in theory, obviously, and in practice, to pass whatever they want, because there's no luck in their way. So while you paint the picture, you know, of reasonableness, which we hope happens, you know, there's been a Democratic governor for 16 years, and the previous one used a branding iron to veto things, and they don't have that as an obstacle anymore.
They sure don't.
Let me switch to a different aspect of this just for a moment. I saw today some photos from the Republican caucus, and not a single member that I could see was wearing a mask, shaking hands, patting each other on the back, speaking in the room. Rather than say, you know, what's wrong with them for not wearing masks? That's my general visceral reaction. I've known half a dozen people who've died from COVID. I've known many that have, you know, that are sick now from COVID. The Missoula case rate in the past week has been over 70 cases a day. The national average is only 48 cases a day. If we were a country, if Montana was a country, we'd have the eighth highest incident of COVID per capita of any country in the world. So my question really to you is, as a public servant and someone trying to, as concerned about public health, what do they have right? What's the thinking about ignoring masks and not following, you know, what science and healthcare has indicated is a helpful way to proceed? Why do they think they're right about this?
You know, Arnie, I think we've touched on this in some of our previous conversations. So there's a component of this that is simply theater, President Trump has I think successfully turned the White House into a stage. When he turns out the base, the folks who want to get reelected are going to go in that direction. The other thing that I think we've talked about in the past is that in the age of social media, everybody gets their own set of facts. And in that arena, kind of anything goes, right? So there's theater, there's statement, there's some fact, there's some just sort of defiance, right? And I think, you know, the Republican Party has done its best to sort of establish itself as sort of common sense, no drama, and absolutely a snowflake-free zone. And we as Democrats haven't done a great job of demonstrating that we're not really snowflakes, and that science and facts matter.
Right, but as we know, this is not just a philosophical debate about whether, you know, a social democrat is a socialist or not, you know, based on, this is a life or death issue. I remember, you know, I'm a couple of decades older than you almost. And I remember when the seatbelt laws first came in, and there was a lot of reaction to that. My father didn't like wearing them, for example. But he always said, hey, if I die, I die. So, I mean, it wasn't going to really affect any. He didn't tell me not to wear one in the car. You know, they had to be installed at that time, you know, but he didn't want to wear one. This is a little bit different because your behavior affects other people, people that you don't even know and people that you do know. And so I really find, you know, this to make a political statement or make it a wedge issue or make it a liberal versus conservative issue is really a damaging direction that we've headed. Putting aside, you know, whether you can find an objector to the common knowledge about, you know, that science has about this, how do you, as a mayor, trying to keep this under control in Missoula, Montana, you know, what are your options? You know, how do you overcome this?
Well, the challenge from day one for us in Missoula and in cities throughout the United States is that that without a federal response to what is a national crisis, we're all ad hoc, right? And because we're ad hoc and multiple jurisdictions are doing things differently, our ability to be consistent has been tempered dramatically. There is absolutely no point in issuing a stay-at-home order for Missoula County if Ravalli County is open, and if Mineral County is open, and if Granite County is open. So this lack of federal response to something that's killed, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans continues to be sort of mind-boggling to me. We've talked about this before. You know, my dad was a World War II veteran, right? Spent about 3.5 years in the Pacific. My mother and I have had conversations of late about food rations, and you know, you couldn't buy nylons during the war, and the list goes on. And we would have lost the goddamn World War if chronology had changed, right? We're not that nation anymore. I'd like to think that we could be that nation again over time. Pendulum swing, circumstances change, people get fed up one way or another. But that notion that we were all in this together has gone missing, and really we need to find that as the president-elect talks about the struggle for the soul of the nation. The soul of the nation hinges dramatically on whether we elect to be in service to one another, and self-interest and personal responsibility only take you so far, and then you need help.
County Commissioner Slodnick have, you know, formed a formidable team working together on COVID and COVID response. Has working with the surrounding counties become more challenging as time has gone on, or is it just equally as challenging all the way through over the past 9 months?
You know, I think it's been consistently challenging, and it really isn't because of the health officials who in this state are charged with that responsibility. They have statutory authority to support public health and manage through these crises. It's the elected officials responding. Either responding to things they hear or parroting things that they've heard at the federal or state level in some cases. Sort of consistently challenging. But the health officials, I think, are pretty darn squared away and have the best interests of the public. And it's really a challenging job, right? Because all sorts of oxes get gored here. I think we'll see a legislative push to remove some of that authority from the independent health agencies. And that it's always a mixed bag, right? If I'm the elected official, I think the elected officials ought to be in charge. but if it's an elected official I don't agree with, then I don't agree, right? So my hope is that we can maintain some degree of independence. I would like the collaborative opportunities between health officer and local elected officials to grow. I think being a health official, being a health officer, is a really lonely place, and without the support of electeds, and those collaborative conversations, which we've had a ton of over the course of the last months, we're sort of setting ourselves up for failure.
Let me ask you this. I noticed that Governor-elect Gianforte has appointed a number of commissions and advisory groups in a variety of areas. I didn't see, and maybe it's my I overlooked it. I didn't see anybody from Missoula appointed to any of these so far.
Is that correct? It is correct, and I've had a number of people point that out to me and ask me what I think of that. You know, is Missoula being punished? I'm going to give the governor-elect benefit of the doubt. I suspect that he's got relationships, and the folks in his circle relationships as well. So I'm guessing he put together a team that made some sense to him based on what and who he knows. And we'll just see from here. I sent the governor-elect a letter yesterday congratulating him and letting him know that there's lots of experience in Montana's cities and towns. We are very close to the folks we serve, and we're pretty practical in terms of meeting community need and solving problems. And if we can be a resource, we want to be.
Yeah. Now, you always wonder in a time when administration changes, both here in Montana and nationally, there's always a call for unity and for reaching across the aisle. But in my experience, it rarely happens. Or if it starts out to happen a little bit, it quickly gets derailed. So I'm hoping you're right. My sense is it's not an error. It's not a mistake. It's not an error of omission. But anyway, I want to talk about COVID's effect here in Missoula. We received $80 million in the county for Corona relief grants. What do you think the impact of that has been? And maybe more to the point, what do you think would have happened if we didn't get that $80 million in the county?
I think a lot of doors would be shuttered today, and a lot more people would be unemployed. Yeah, I mean, it's been significant. It's been significant for us in local government. We've used CARE funding to support salaries of first responders. And I mean, it's been a lifeline in terms of our budget for fiscal year 21, and we'll have benefits beyond that. Business owners I talked to have certainly been grateful for the support that they've had through CARES. We'd be in a much different place today. My concern is that we are in worse shape today in Missoula, Montana, and in Montana in general than we were in March and April and May and June. While there appears to be some light at the end of the tunnel in terms of vaccine, I think we got a couple of really rocky months here, and if we're going to keep restaurants and bars in business post pandemic, they're going to need financial help.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from my perspective, I think businesses have been as resourceful as they could be. You know, from having igloos at the Top Hat, outdoor igloos, you know, for protection, to all sorts of other kind of dining experiences and restaurants doing curbside pickup and retail stores doing the same thing, and you know, trying to maneuver as best they can given the circumstances. And beyond that, what do you say? I know we're struggling, and we've got a couple of more difficult months ahead of us than we've had behind us. And why is that? Just the length of how this has been going, how long this has been dragging on?
I think it's a function of how long it's been dragging on, and how much more disciplined I think we're going to need to be if we want to break the back of this thing. If we are simply in a position of owning that a lot more people are going to get sick, and as a function of that, some of those folks are going to die. I mean, if we're willing to accept that, then it's, you know, Katie bar the door, right? I think we can do whatever we want. But if we are intentional about tempering this and sparing folks from suffering, the discipline that you saw in governor's order, the discipline that you saw in Missoula County, Missoula City County Health Department's order is going to be necessary. The challenge for us issuing that order is that we didn't have any ability to provide financial support with it. The state does, and so my hope is that as the governor suggested in his remarks yesterday, some remaining CARES Act dollars can go to support these businesses who are, and it's not just anecdotal. I talked with these business owners. They're on the ropes, and it's not just a business owner who's, you know, I think folks have the mistaken impression that, if you own a business, you're loaded and you can ride out anything. That clearly isn't the case. And those small businesses employ people. And, you know, I look at the folks who are in the service industry in particular, who are just, they're going to be on the ropes with the folks who employ them. And that creates all sorts of community challenges.
Right. And even if you are an advocate and a believer, and a heartfelt believer in herd immunity, and let's just all get sick and see what happens, and you're going to get a vaccine, that doesn't mitigate the fact that people are going to the hospital, not because, you know, out of a political statement, they're going to the hospital because they can't breathe, right. You know, and I don't know what our room rates are here, but I know in Billings they had to fly in 30 doctors and they're putting people in parking lots. I think we're at something like 75% of ER capacity. If you get much higher than that, my concern is, you know, for people who have another kind of medical emergency. You know, a kid gets hit by a kid gets hit by a car. You know, somebody breaks their arm or leg. You know, all the other things that can happen that you need emergency or trauma care for, it's not going to be available.
That's
an unintended consequence of this, but it's a serious life-threatening consequence of all of this.
And from, you know, from day one, nationally at the state level and locally, we've been all about preserving the capacity in the healthcare system for all the reasons you described. That was sort of job one, is let's make sure that our hospitals aren't overrun. And we are as close to that in Missoula, Montana today as we've been. Fortunately, we've had months to sort of build a foundation and create contingency plans. Whatever's next is far optimal, but it's also not end of day. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Making sure that the healthcare system, which is designed for non-pandemic healthcare, can handle non-pandemic healthcare.
So riddle me this, Mayor. We have a pretty high in Montana and in Missoula. It's more than we want. It's been going up. The last week average is over 70 cases per week. Yet we have people moving here from places that have less of an incident of COVID. Washington State and California per capita per 100,000 has a lower incident of COVID than we do, and our real estate market has never been more booming than it is now. The inventory of product in the market is very low. Prices have gone up by 20% over this time last year. What's going on?
So, Arnie, when I've been thinking lately, when we did your podcast, and I was pretty bullish on the future of Missoula. I think I said that we discovered in a kind of a different way. Weirdly, none of that has changed, and I frankly think that COVID has exacerbated it. Right. So mm-hmm. We will come to the end of this, and there will be consequences to it. But I think Missoula's concept. I think we will be far less impacted than some other places, because we were discovered for being cool, and now we've been discovered, rightly or wrongly, as a place where COVID isn't rampaging, right?
Or at least you have more open space
Exactly, right? I mean, if your per capita numbers are similar, but the capita is a lot smaller, you've got some room to roam, right?
I mean, if you're in downtown San Francisco, I mean, you have a few parks, but you can't easily walk 5 minutes and
be
hardly anywhere.
Yeah, so I think there's a bunch of, you know, there's a bunch of psychology at play here. There's also a bunch of wealth that's been on the sidelines, and people are thinking, well, here is, you know, we've been thinking about doing something, and now it's time to do it. I've made the acquaintance of a number of folks who came home, quote unquote, as a function of work from home orders, and it just seemed like a good idea to get back to Missoula and be around friends and family, and have realized that they don't need to go back. They're going to be remotely and have a good life here. Those folks bring resources. In some cases, they bring business.
Right.
They bring appreciation for the place. A place that some of us take for granted, and
disposable income.
Yeah, and I think the net result will not be Bozemanification of Missoula. I think the net will be we'll have more people and more resources, and people who appreciate the coolness of the place. We don't become generic.
I think there's also, Arnie, I think there's also the Yellowstone factor. You know, you have a major television program that happens to capture the psyche of everyone right now.
Another one launching called Big Sky.
It just launched last night, Arnie, and it's...
Yeah, I haven't watched it.
But the point is that we saw that reality television could give us a president. Television series could bring us new residents.
Right. You know, and some of them, I just made the acquaintance of somebody who came back, just like the mayor was saying, a former University of Montana student who was the head of global change, management for the Gap and for Old Navy, based in San Francisco. She was told she could live anywhere. She didn't have to live in San Francisco, and immediately moved to Missoula. You know, so you're able to bring folks in like that. It would be interesting if someone did a survey of sort of the, you know, who's coming here and, you know, what does the profile look like? You know, you might make an argument with that if they fit a certain kind of demographic, our state may be becoming more conservative or more liberal, or may really shift the balance in a state with only a little over a million people if you have 100,000 people moving here that have come from a particular segment of the population.
Yeah, my hunch is that if you're a relatively conservative person and you're paying any attention at all, you're likely going to end up in another Montana city than Missoula.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you have a job here, or you went to the university, or you
know, family,
you
know, right.
But I'm talking, yeah, and that's probably absolutely true about Missoula. But in terms of, you know, statewide demographics and statewide elections, you know, you might see us become permanently a red state as a result of some of those changes. And some other things that you alluded to earlier, which is, you know, the inability, I think, of the Democrats in the state to put up a ticket that differentiated itself from the most strident elements of the National Democratic Party. I mean, I don't think anybody with any real information about things really believes, you know, Kathleen Williams is Nosey's clone, you know, or any of these other sort of things that Mike Cooney is an ultra-liberal socialist. I mean, he's been around for 44 years. You've seen his record. He hasn't done that. But weren't able to extricate themselves from that. And that's not only a problem here in Montana, but I think it's a problem that the National Party has that given how many seats they lost, they were supposed to pick up seats in the United States House of Representatives, they're going to have maybe a single-digit majority, which is very unusual when the White House changes party and the rest of it doesn't come along with it.
Yeah, really unusual. And I mean, and it is interesting. So if you look at let's just look at recent history. Governor Schweitzer threaded that needle, right?
Yes.
Right. Governor Bullock threaded that needle. Senator Tester continues to thread that needle, mm-hmm. and I think just gets better at it over time. You know, his margin in his last race was the best he's had. Even though the president was out here four times hammering on him. But it really is, if you look at each of those gentlemen, you're gonna see relatively moderate Democrats, who made members of their own party mad, certainly made members of the other party mad, but also pleased members of the other party occasionally.
Mm. I remember when Brian Schweitzer was asked what was his position on guns. It was one of my favorite political lines ever. He said, I have more than I need, but less than I want. And he never got asked about it again once he said that, right? I mean, defined his position, and everybody could relate to that.
That's very Governor Schweitzer. Max Baucus, Senator Baucus, Ambassador Baucus, moderate guy, threaded the needle. Mm-hmm. Mark Roscoe, Republican, also threaded the needle, right?
Well, here's an example. As you mentioned, Mark. Mark was a Republican governor, very successful. He became the Republican National Committee chairman and publicly said he was voting for Joe Biden for president. So he had always been sort of in the middle, and even to this day, he hasn't moved along with some of the flow in the Republican Party, you know, to become, you know, the Trump Party. It's not even, I took a look at some of the Republican Party platform from 20 years ago, and it resembles the Democratic Party platform of today almost. It's moved, and on the other hand, 72 million plus people voted for Donald Trump in this country.
Yep.
So there's something that he offered and provided, you know, that that resonated with a good portion of the electorate.
Yep,
it's something that we can't just dismiss. Democrats can't just dismiss it. They have to understand it and figure out a way to provide something that meets some of those people's needs.
Yeah, and if we could not dismiss each other, right?
Right.
We can't dismiss 70 million people who voted for Donald Trump. In the same way that the 78 or so who voted for Joe Biden ought not. It's a two-way street.
Sure it is. And people also forget, and I like to remind them of this, that probably the greatest president of the last 100 years, you know, has probably been Franklin Roosevelt. He came in, he got elected four times president of the United States. That had changed the Constitution after that. He got us out of the Great Depression. He instituted all the great programs, Social Security, and all. In his best year, 40% of the people still voted against him.
Right.
There's been that streak in this country. I mean, in this day and age, 51% of the vote is a landslide.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and so you can't ignore the reality of that. That you can't. You're not going to appeal to 75% of the population, no matter who you are, what you do.
Right. And I think the importance is that our system, if it's 51%, that's all you need to count to, right?
Yeah, exactly. Although the Electoral College makes it always an interesting exercise. You know, those of us who are constitutionalists, or a new terminology that I didn't hear of until last year or so, an originalist, you know, go back and say this is the way it's always been, and disregard or minimize the reason that was first put into place. You know, even though heritage and it's a couple of hundred years old, doesn't mean it can't be or shouldn't be revisited and thought about in terms of the way society lives and operates now.
It's a lot different.
Yeah, I mean, when they wrote that the largest city in the United States was Boston, it had 40,000 people. You know, it's a completely different reality that we're dealing with now, and that was put in at that time, the Electoral College, in order to make sure that the South was appeased. They thought they were going to be run over, you know, by two or three big states like that had 40,000, that had a city of 40,000. You know, now it leads itself towards a much more, I think, stilted minority rule, you know, kind of dynamic. I think the when Donald Trump got 306 electoral votes last time, the actual number of people that made up that electoral votes was 20 million less than were in the, you know, the votes that Hillary Clinton got. So 20 million less people comprised those number of electoral votes, and that wasn't, I think, the original intention to be that skewed. But anyway, it's important to talk about and important to, you know, to revisit in the context of everything else that's going on. Have you had conversations since the election with John Tester?
I have not talked with John. I talked to his chief of staff at LinkedIn. But yeah, Senator Tester and I have not yet. And I'm looking
because
forward to that conversation.
He is the surviving statewide Democratic office holder, and you are, I think, the elected official representing the most people of the Democratic Party at this point in Montana. Is that correct? Billings mayor isn't a Democrat. Is the mayor in Billings a Democrat?
I don't know, Artie.
I don't think so. But
it's hard to think that it would be, or she would be.
It doesn't matter. You're one of the, if not the number one, you are one of the top two local Democratic officials. And the two of you, in many ways, are now the leadership of the Democratic Party in the state of Montana. So you don't need an extra layer of responsibility thrust on your shoulders, given everything else you're dealing with.
Leadership over time has and I'm grateful largely fallen to statewide electeds in particular governor and senators kind of leading that charge so I'm surprisingly not all that involved. I've been around a while, and if anybody wants my free advice, which is worth every penny, I'm happy to offer it. But I'll leave that work to Senator Tester. If he wants to recruit me, he certainly can.
We've talked a lot about 2020. What do we have to look forward to in 2021, Mayor? Both here in Missoula and, you know, in the state.
So as I look through the fog of COVID, I think that I see development happening at the pace that we saw pre-COVID, and more. I see housing production continuing to be a critical issue for City of Missoula, and we're doing a lot about that. I think we see a lot of sort of post-mortem activity with COVID. I think everyone's going to look at their emergency planning. I think everyone's going to look at their resources and inventory of personal protective equipment. I think we're going to have to sort through how vaccinations happen in this nation and in our place. But I think kids get back to school, parents get a little bit of relief. I think the nature of the workplace remains changed. There will still be a need for office space throughout our community, and I think more will get built and be occupied. But the workplace is different of choice and productivity, and I think if you're buying Zoom stock today, it's probably still a good idea. I'm an optimist, so I see, right. I see the place that's been growing and thriving for some time continuing to grow and thrive.
Absolutely. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Mayor John Angan on What Do You Know? Back after this. Okay, we are back, Arnie, with our guest, Mayor John Angan.
So given all that we've discussed, Mayor, what's your priority, your highest priorities for 2021?
Housing, making sure that we are creating an environment where quality development can happen quickly and relatively painlessly. Fundamentally, if folks aren't housed, and I mean from a billionaire to somebody whose residence is currently a car, everyone needs a house in order to thrive. And or a home, I should say, in order to thrive. And that is an unmet need in the community, so we're working diligently on that. Equity is another issue. We haven't forgotten Black Lives Matter. We're continuing to engage, really looking at our own operation and making sure that that we're doing everything we need to do as an institution to ensure equity in the workplace. And if we learn from that and can expand that experience to the rest of the community, we're going to do that as well. Continue we're delivering the highest level of service that we possibly can at the lowest rate of taxation. We have folks who have high expectations, and I tell you, I have a team today at City Hall, which with such remarkable talent and drive to do everything we do better, that I suspect we'll see the results of that enthusiasm in really short order, and we're seeing some of it today.
Fantastic. Mayor, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you and get your insights on what's going on, and we wish you well in the rest of 2020 and stay healthy and safe for 2021.
Gentlemen, you do the same. Great to see you. Thanks for taking the time with me.
We're grateful for your time, too. Thank you, Mayor. Thanks, Arnie. I'll see you next week.
Take care, Scott. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.